You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Pass it blocked. Oh, what a nightmare start.
Wow.
Sean Thomas Erlington comes back home and has a touchdown. See if they can finish here. Masoli, and he's got his man. He's got the touchdown. Brandon Banks, and the opening drive, the Hamilton Tiger Cats take it to the house. Masoli, dancing, tucks it, takes it to the end zone. Mandel retreats, and it's picked again. His fourth interception, and this time, Mike Daly has it.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Oh, Mike, what a difference a week makes. Sitting down to record the show this week, we're in a lot better mood, I would think, aren't we?
Much better mood. What a spectacular performance. I know it was against the Alouettes, but you have to play who's in front of you, and they beat the crap out of Montreal this week. It was fun to watch, wasn't it?
A dominating performance, my friend. It was from almost the opening whistle. It was Ticats all the way. 28 points in the first quarter, en route to a 50-11 victory. Again, like you said, it is Montreal, but you don't beat teams 50-11 very often in professional sports. So it might have just been the Alouettes, but man, it feels really good,
especially
to get this
in
win.
Hockey, right?
This win. No, if it's 50-11 in hockey, I want to watch that game. But you know what I mean? No. Like, it's just so nice to kind of see the team. We went into this game, and we can touch on it right now a little bit. Last week when we did our why they'll win while they lose, a lot of things I touched on why they'd win. They're just better than Montreal, and the stats bore that out. So to see the Ticats in a game where they should have won by 3, 4, 5 touchdowns, you know what I mean? Actually do it. It eases things a little bit because we've been wondering the last few weeks, is this team any good? And yes, it's only against Montreal, but the Stampeders, and I'm not comparing the Ticats to the Stampeders. Stampeders didn't beat Montreal 50-11. So I'm just saying, like, it's very nice to see our team that we think is good have a dominating win over a team that they should have a dominating win over. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and it's a road game. Anytime you go on the road, it's tough to win. So, you know, like June Jones says, we want to win all the games at home. That hasn't happened yet, but to steal a road win from any team is huge.
Oh, it is. And I think Masoli, I think they showed it on TSN. He's like 6-1 as a starter in road games versus Eastern opponents. It's like, it's almost like we should play all our games on the road, no?
Yeah, and against the East. I mean, obviously we have Winnipeg next week, but a large number of our opponents coming up will be Eastern opponents. So, you know, Masoli 6-1, that bodes well for the rest of the season.
So dominance was the name of the game in this one, Mike. Offensively speaking, they rolled up 510 yards. They averaged 13.8 yards on second down, which is incredible. No, unless you're on second and 15 every time, you're picking up a first down almost every second down you get when you're rolling up almost 14 yards per second down. They dominated time of possession once again. They were 64% on those second downs. But the big one, the one I know you want to talk about, they were 4-for-5 in the red zone. They finished drives with touchdowns. How did that make you feel watching the game?
It made me feel a lot more confident in this team. You know, we were trying to get over that hump week after week. We couldn't punch the ball into the end zone. And hopefully this is the start of the Ticats offense being highly productive in the red zone, scoring touchdowns on, you know, 70% plus of the time they get there. You know, I don't expect them to score touchdowns every single time. I'll take threes every once in a while. I get it. It happens. But to see them score, what was it, 5 touchdowns? It's really encouraging to see. And another thing is the play calling, Josh. I'm looking at the rushing and passing attempts. 29 passing attempts in the game. 26 rushing attempts. Now, that's a balanced attack, my friend.
That is a hugely balanced attack. Now, of course, a lot of that has to do with they're up by so much late in the game. They're running the football to kind of eat clock. But still, I don't think we should expect – and I don't think you, who is someone who is a proponent of balanced attack, as I think most Ticats fans want the team to be, going almost one-to-one rush to pass, I think we all understand that that's not likely. But to see them, even if they – like we talked about last week, if they're in that 65-35 range, that's good. To see them almost be 50-50, that's incredible.
Yeah, and it's, you know, 169 yards on the ground, and it was not done by one person, obviously. I mean, they rotated their running backs. Alex Green had a good game. Sean Thomas Erlington had a good game. Azoli ran a bit. You know, Mercer Timmis got a rush. So it seems like when they incorporate those Canadian running backs into the scheme, good things happen. And, you know, who's the complete idiot now, Josh? I mean, Alex Green comes in. Where's John White? He didn't even freaking play. So, listen, I said that just totally on feel. Like, I had no reason to think that they would replace Alex Green. But if you look back on it, June Jones is a guy that actually goes by the rule you don't lose your job to injury. So maybe it did make some sense in the end.
I've been waiting since Friday. After Green scored his second touchdown, I was like, I'm going to have to eat a whole bucket of crow from Mike on this one after what we went through last week. And when you're right, my friend. And Alex Green did have a great game. Let's talk defensively for a second, though. We were talking about dominance. Defense dominated once again. Montreal had just 247 yards of offense. 107 of those were passing yards. Obviously, the team only allowed 11 points. They created 6 turnovers, including 4 interceptions off a certain former Ticat quarterback. The Owls were kept to 40% on second down conversions, and they converted just 1 of their 3 red zone trips into touchdowns. Mike, if the offense plays like this, and then, again, I'm not expecting 50 points, but if the offense plays like the way they did in this one and the defense plays like the way they did in this one, they're going to be really hard to stop.
Yeah, the defense was phenomenal in this game. I felt like they created pressure on Manziel. He was, you know, running around trying to keep himself alive, basically, because they were in his grill pretty much all game. You know, you talk about the interceptions. Great stuff. You know, creating turnovers was a must for this team. A big concern of ours in the past couple of weeks, obviously red zone production and turnovers. And they got a whack of turnovers and a whack of touchdowns. So if you're a Ticat fan, that's got to be encouraging.
All right, let's get into what we liked and disliked about the game. You kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. You talked about the run game. I ate my crow on that. What else is there about this game that you love, pal?
Well, you know, there's just so much to like about this game, but I gotta go with the turnovers, because we've been talking about this forever. And to create, even though it was on Johnny Manziel, his first game, he was thrown into the fire. I think he'll be better in later games. You just gotta love those turnovers. You just gotta be happy about this team creating stuff on defense, you know, stops and turning the ball over.
Oh, for sure. It's one of those things where we, like you said, we waited all year for this team to start creating turnovers. And it's one of those things where once they have it in them that they can do it, maybe it's something that will sort of snowball from here. Now, obviously, we're not looking at 6 turnovers, 4 picks every week. But if they can get 1 or 2 every week, like it's those things where if they can flip field position, which is exactly what they did. They go down, first drive, score a touchdown. Very next drive, second play of Montreal's drive, Larry Dean takes the pick. They start the ball at like the 12-yard line. They punch it in for a touchdown. Like, it's those sort of field-flipping, game-changing turnovers that this team hadn't done and why they're kind of sitting at 3-4. But some of those bounces, some of those near interceptions that we've seen, if they start to become actual interceptions, this team can get on a roll and maybe win some football games.
Yeah, I mean, you get the turnovers, you get the field position, and then you score touchdowns. So that was huge for them in this game.
All right. You and I were texting about it, talking about our man love for one player in particular, Mike. Why don't you throw to the guy that we both were like fighting over about who would get to marry him in theory.
Yes. I mean, I might have to get down on one knee, Josh. It's Jalen Saunders. Woo. Again. I mean, this kid is racking up the yardage. 7 receptions, 150 yards, 21.4 yard average, a long of 48, and a touchdown. I mean, what can you say? This guy is phenomenal right now. He's one of the best receivers in the league. You can't argue with it after like, you know, even going back to last year, he was one of the bright spots on this team. And to continue it into this year, this guy is a stud. He is my future husband. So I don't know. What do you have to say?
Look, he's second in the league in receiving now. He still seems to be under the radar. Look, I understand that after this game, all the talk was going to be about Johnny Manziel. And I'm okay with that. It was his first start. He's a big name. People wanted to talk about him. I get it. Then the next up is going to be Jeremiah Mazzoli, which we're going to get to in a second. Talking about how he had kind of a bounce back performance in this one. And I get that too. But man, what does Jalen Saunders have to do to get some publicity outside of our show, Mike? Like, it just seems like we're the only guys talking about him on like a national stage. Like, they don't really talk about him on TSN. You don't see articles written about him on the CFL website. Like, what's it going to take for this guy to get his due? We've seen all the talk about Duke Williams, who is in Edmonton and is the leading receiver and has put up massive games and has deserved the attention. Jalen Saunders is just a tick below him, and yet he's this anonymous guy. Is it because he's on an offense with guys like Brandon Banks and Luke Tasker, where maybe he's sort of the forgotten man because of those bigger names here? I just don't know what it's going to take for him to finally get the recognition he deserves, because he is balling out.
Yeah, and Chris Williams and Terrence Tolliver, there's a lot of names in this receiving core. And I think that soon, like next week soon, the panel's going to start talking about him. Everybody's going to start noticing this guy, because how could you not? Every week he seems to lead the team in reception yards, and he's scoring touchdowns. So I think that the praise is coming very, very soon.
All right, speaking of praise, let's bump it over to my things I like about the game. And I'm going to start with the man under center number 8, Jeremiah Mazzoli. The number is 17 to 26, 300 yards even, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks, 5 carries for 36 yards on the ground, and a rushing touchdown. We'll get to those 2 picks in a second, but let's talk about the good things he did. He was slinging it. He was throwing it deep. He was making quick throws, which is something I noticed in this one. He just had a wonderful, wonderful game. And a lot of people were saying maybe he felt the need to kind of ball out in this one, but this is what Jeremiah Mazzoli's been doing for the last year. So this is nothing new. He had a down game a couple weeks ago. The offense hadn't been doing stuff. He exploded in this one, and look where it led us. Just an amazing game from Mazzoli.
Yeah, you got to wonder what Montreal was looking at, like, because it seemed like Saskatchewan and even Ottawa had the key to success against this offense, and the offense was pretty much the same, and they just dominated this Montreal defense. But yeah, I can't say enough about Mazzoli. A huge bounce back game. You mentioned the numbers. The 2 picks were unfortunate, but you know, that happens sometimes, okay? Like, the guy's not going to be perfect. I was very, very happy, especially in the first half. He was just... the offense seemed unstoppable, and Mazzoli seemed unstoppable as well.
Did you notice in this one that they didn't roll with the 6-man offensive line as much? Did you notice it was a lot of 5-man protection, and it was 5 wide, and it was a lot of one read and throw? Like, Luke Tasker made a difference in this offense. There were a couple of times this game. Tasker didn't have huge numbers, but there was a couple of times in this game where Mazzoli takes the ball, takes a quick step, and just finds Tasker for a quick hitter. Like, there were a lot of quick throws in this, and they didn't use the – I wonder if that kind of confused Montreal's defense, because this is kind of the first time all season we've seen Hamilton not really go to that big group.
Yeah, I bet you Tasker made a huge difference. I mean, you throw underneath, and I mentioned this a million times on this podcast, what he's going to find – he has a nose for the first down. So him being in the offense is huge for the Ticats. It's huge for Jeremiah Mazzoli. I mean, he's so dependable that Mazzoli can just – find him when he's, you know, under pressure, or his first or second read's not working, and he can just dump it off underneath the Tasker. I think it's huge for this offense, and I think that even though Terrence Tolliver had minuscule numbers, only 2 catches for 18 yards, I think that helped out the offense as well.
So last thing I want to touch on here is we're going to go back to the defensive side of the ball. And it's the secondary. Jamal Roll, a kind of an unheralded player in that secondary, had 2 of the 4 interceptions. Mike Daly had 1 of the 4 interceptions. But it just feels like this unit's really coming into its own. This is one of those, areas that, and we've said this week in, week out for what seems like forever now, we're always concerned. They're rotating guys in. They're trying to figure out who's going to fit where. Guys are getting cut. Guys are getting brought in. Like, it's been a revolving door in the secondary pretty much the last, well, at least the last 5 years that I can think of. And now it seems like they have their unit. And I know we kind of talked about this a little bit last week, but this secondary, Mike, it's actually really, really good. They didn't have the turnovers go their way before. They got them this week, but they have been shutting teams down. They're number two against the pass in all the CFL behind just Calgary, which Calgary's defense is out of this. It's almost like we need to take Calgary out of the equation with how good their defense has been and just talk about all the like where they rank amongst the eight. Hamilton's just behind the Stampeders, man, and I think a lot of that has to do with sticking with this core group. And they did make the one change, bringing in Delvin Bro, but that's – come on. I don't care who was playing in Delvin – I don't even remember who was playing in Delvin Bro's spot before Bro got here. That's a change you make any day of the week. But once they've had these five together since – I guess it was what, the Edmonton game in week two? These guys have been phenomenal.
Yeah, I can't say enough about – you know, not rotating players in and out. It drove me crazy in past years. Like, we were rotating secondary players late into the seasons, like week 16, 17. We're still trying to figure it out. And for this group to be together since like week two, I think it's huge. They have the right pieces in place. They have a mixture of young players and experienced players like Delvin Bro. And Mike Daly's fairly young, but he has experience. You know, Courtney Stevens, not a starter, but he's an experienced guy that can lend his knowledge to all the younger guys. And I'm just ecstatic about this defensive secondary right now. I feel like Manziel was targeting Delvin Bro's receiver like on more than one occasion, which doesn't usually happen to more experienced, you know. More experienced quarterbacks know how good Delvin Bro is, so they don't even bother throwing his way. But I felt like Manziel put it up towards him a couple times. He probably regretted it. But yeah, man, I'm just – what can you say? This defense, this secondary is playing at a high level right now.
Let's talk about things we didn't like. And let's couch this in the fact that, yes, we're aware that they won by 39 points, and a lot of these are going to be nitpicky. But it's not like they played a perfect game. They didn't score on every drive. They didn't pick up a first down on every play. There are things in this game that the team didn't do so well. So, Mike, why don't you kick us off with some of the things about this game that you didn't like?
Yeah, it's nitpicky. But 38 points in the first half, only 12 in the second. I know it was a blowout by halftime, but, you know, you'd like to see them keep their, you know, foot on the pedal. Keep it going, not let up. Because you never know what can happen, right? The no lead is safe. This lead was safe, let's be honest, but you never know. So a nitpicky thing, but I would have liked them to see more offensive production in the second half.
Yeah, it's funny because it's one of those things where you kind of forget that, like, you're watching the game and it's like, well, they won 50-11. They scored 28 of those points in the first 12 quarter. Minutes of the game, like,
yeah.
So you're, it's like, I understand the, look, the game is over, like, I know we, you know, you just derisively gave the no lead is safe thing, and we did just see, what was it, the night before, the Argos made a massive comeback on the Red Blacks, so anything's possible, but this thing was over. I said this to you before the show, I'll say it on here on the show, the punt block, to me, that was the end of the game, and once that, it was like, everything was going Hamilton's way. Are the Owls really going to score 20 points? Probably not. Even if Hamilton scored nothing the rest of the game, the Owls probably weren't going to be able to match. And they wouldn't have. They would have scored 11. Like, this game was essentially over midway through the first quarter. So I understand the maybe they're taking their foot off the gas a little bit. But I also see what you're saying in that it would have been nice to see it be more evenly distributed. But you got to think that there was no way they thought going into this game they were going to put 28 points on the board in the first quarter.
No, I don't think anyone did. I mean, I expected them to win, obviously, but I did not expect that onslaught, like 10, 12 minutes into the game, 28. I mean, it was beautiful. Don't get me wrong. It was a thing of beauty, but I don't think anyone expected that right away.
No, no, but another thing, you can't ever expect
another thing
that.
Another thing I didn't like was the penalties. I know, like, three penalties came on special teams, of it probably no yards. But three penalties for 48 yards on special teams. And in total for the whole team, it was 8 penalties, 138 yards. You never want to be over 100 yards in penalties just because, you know, that's pretty much the length of the field. I know it's 110 yards, but it's pretty much the length of the field. You don't want to be giving up that many penalties. So if we could clean that up a bit, I'd be a happy man. But, you know, only 4 on defense and only 1 on offense, which is really, really good. But, yeah, I didn't like the yardage that they racked up on penalties.
Yeah, I think now that this just popped in my head, 2 of those would have been the kicks out of bounds. And Liram Hirelahu's kind of struggled with that a little bit this year. He's had some punts go out of bounds, had some kickoffs go out of bounds. I think he had one of each in this one, and there's your probably at least 25 yards, if not more so, in penalties right there. And that stuff, again, maybe, you know, time and place, like, they're probably up big. I know on the one that went out of bounds, I believe it was like a late kick, very late in the game after I think they were up. It might have been the touchdown that put them up 47-3. So it was one of those things where I don't know why they're kicking it low, but they did, and it rolled out of bounds. It might have even been later than that, but so I guess I don't know. I'm with you, though. The penalties are a problem, and I just don't think that in this one, some like those ones in particular, and there was the big pass interference penalty, which we're going to talk about in a second, that I thought was, to put it mildly, BS. I just feel like some of these we might not see going forward, but yeah, I agree with you, Mike. It's a little disheartening to see the team give up so many yards in penalties again.
Yeah, especially when last week they had 11 for 100 and something too. So, you know, I it is very, very nitpicky of me, but, you know, there's not much to dislike in this game. The last two games, there was a lot to dislike. This game, I'm very happy that there was only a couple things that I disliked.
Yeah, so I'm going to be probably even more nitpickier than you. And one of the things I didn't like in this game, and this pains me to say, and I can't wait, I feel like you're going to yell at me or something when I say this. Luke Tasker kind of disappointed me in this game, Mike. And, you know, first game back after missing the last two. And the thing was, he had some uncharacteristic drops. And that's what really stood out to me. He had 3 drops in this game, one of which led to Jeremiah Mazzoli's first interception. There were balls that hit him square in the hands. Now, I know a lot of them were some fastballs that Mazzoli was throwing. But those are usually the passes that Tasker catches. You know what I mean? Like, he's Mr. Reliable. He's Mr. Second Down, as we've said before. And again, I'm not concerned or anything. I don't think Luke Tasker's lost a step or anything like that. But look, they won by 39. We have to find something to dislike. And those drops are just like, oh man, Tasker doesn't usually drop those. And so I guess it's more disappointment than dislike, if that makes sense.
You shut your mouth. No, I agree. That was very unlike him to drop those balls, but you know, he had an okay game, 3 catches, 49 yards. I feel like he bailed out Mazzoli a couple times. But yeah, not exactly a top-end Luke Tasker performance.
Yeah, it's just not what you expect from him, right? Like when the ball goes to Tasker, you expect a catch and, you know, anywhere from 8-plus yards to, I don't know, I guess eight yards or more is usually about Tasker's Tasker's range. Sometimes best a big one for 20-plus, but, you know, he's in that 8 to 12-yard range. So you just, when you see the ball go his way, you just go, oh, he's going to catch it. And then when he does it, it's like, oh. And then when he doesn't catch one, it goes for an interception. You're like, oh, like this is – maybe it's just, you know, ring rust they talk about, stuff like that. Maybe this was just some field rust for Tasker. And, again, I don't expect him to – I don't expect this to be a concern going forward. But, yeah, he's – it just sucked because it's like, ah, oh, he's our guy. Like, he's probably, if we were to pick a guy that represents you and I on the show, it'd be Luke Tasker. So to see him have a bit of an off game was sad for me.
He'll bounce back, Josh. He'll bounce back next game.
He will indeed. The last thing in this, and this is less nitpicky and more just, I just want to talk about it. The touchdown that Montreal scored, it was, and look, we don't try to rip the referees on here because they have a hard job and they are right 95% of the time. But sometimes you have a game where that 5% rears its ugly head. And I think that the Alouettes were essentially handed a touchdown on this one. Mike, I'm curious to know how you feel. They get the long bomb to, I want to say it was BJ Cunningham. I could be wrong. That gets a pass interference call on Kerryo Brooks that I think was suspect at best. Yes, it looked like he had his arm on the outside of his body, but didn't look like he twisted him. It looked like he used it. Jumped, knocked the ball away, and then the two-point convert, man, that was a straight-up drop. I do not know how replay looked at that and didn't see the ball hit the ground, when the replay on TSN showed us the ball hit the ground. So, yes, the Ticats won 50-11 in this one, but without those gifts of 8 points by the referees, this could have been a lot worse for Montreal. So what did you think? You watched the game too. What did you think about the PI call, and then what did you think about the two-point convert? Because I thought that those were two bad calls.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you here, Josh. I thought they were both, you know, not very good calls at all. So, yes, the game was well in hand and all that, but I don't understand why, you know, they look at scoring plays, do they not? Like, that 2-point conversion was clearly not a 2-point conversion.
No, it wasn't a catch. It was not a catch. I'm less ticked about the PI. Because that's a judgment call, and look, if the roles were reversed, I would be like, I'd want that going our way. But it's like, I don't know if I want that call. PI, the 2-point convert is the one that I just don't get. Because like you said, they look at scoring plays, and it's like, it's so clear that ball hits the ground without the receiver, who I don't remember who it was, having control of it. I don't know how that stood. I really don't.
No, it's like they're looking at it and they go, who cares, you know, whatever. Let's just move it along, you know, whatever. And I thought that a couple times with some scoring plays this season where it looked like a knee might have been down before he crossed the plane, or the ball was not quite across the plane. I mean, it's a head scratcher to me, because these plays are supposed to be looked at. So if they're not looking at them, or they don't care, then why even bother?
Why even bother, indeed? All right, but what we are going to bother with once again this week, we're going to give out a Podsky Player of the Week. We had a number of worthy candidates this week. Mike, who did we select as our Podsky Player of the Week for this game?
Two times in a row. Jalen Saunders, 7 receptions, 150 yards, you know, a long of 48, 21.4 yard average, and a touchdown. This kid is amazing. We gushed over him earlier. I don't have to say much more. He is the Podsky Player of the Game for this week.
Absolutely. I do want to give we didn't talk about this before the show. I want to give a slight shout out to Brandon Banks. He had another 100-yard game in this one. And he chipped in on special teams after Frankie Williams got hurt. And it didn't look like – and this is after a week where he missed a lot of practice time because he was injured. Brandon Banks is just out there. He's a gamer, man. He's a baller. And Saunders is our Player of the Week, but I thought Banks had a pretty good game. We didn't really talk about him much, but I wanted to give him a shout-out because I thought him pinching in on special teams and still contributing on offense, that's tough to do. And Brandon Banks played his butt off in this one. So, Mike, you ready to get to some news?
News time.
All right. Not a ton this week. The Ticats made some roster moves. They have released two players. They released international defensive back Randall Evans and national wide receiver Mitch O'Connor. Evans played in one game, which was the Winnipeg game, and he recorded one defensive tackle in that game. And then he was signed by the Ottawa Redblacks just on today, on Monday, which led to the release of Lucchese Purifoy, which was a big money sign, not a big money signing, but like it was a major signing by the Redblacks in the offseason. They brought in Purifoy, they brought in Josh Johnson, hoping to make that secondary much more formidable unit. And now both those guys are gone. Kind of crazy how quick a guy can go from penthouse to the outhouse, no?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you see it quite a bit now. Like, players get signed, they're big free agent signings, and then all of a sudden they fall out of favor with the coaching staff, or they find someone else that's cheaper and can do the job just as well. So Purifoy, I'm sure, will be signed somewhere because he is a phenomenal defensive back. I mean, there's, from what I see, I've never actually watched him play, like, you know, focused on him play. But from what I hear, I mean, he's a great player. So it was a bit surprising, but I'm sure they have someone to fill in his place.
Oh, for sure. The other roster moves the team made were kind of precipitated by some injuries that happened in the game last Friday. Today at practice, Adrian Tracy, Connor McGough, Nick Shorto, Frankie Williams, and Justin Vaughn all missed practice. Justin Vaughn was put on the 6-game injured list. What sucks about that is he's been such a valuable rotational player, and he got hurt on like the second to last play of the game. It's like, that's like the game was over, and to see a guy go out at that time, it just really sucks. So because of this, the team signed national linebacker Dylan Grondin. He played 15 games with the Saskatchewan Roughriders in 2016-2017, tallying one defensive tackle and six special teams tackles. My guess is they brought him in as a replacement for Nick Shortle. And then they activated National Defensive Lineman Brett Wade off the practice roster to the active roster. My guess there is he will be filling in for Justin Vaughn. Wade was a 2018 draft pick, so it's another solid addition from draft class. And that's been one of the things that Hamilton's done really well. And we've talked about their Canadian talent a lot this year. They have been using their draft picks. Sean Thomas Erlington is a great example. Eighth round pick a couple of years ago, and now he's making plays. He had the big, scoop and score pump block. You mentioned that he had a good day rushing the ball, only had a few carries, but made the most of it. The Ticats have done a really great job of scouting and drafting players, and Wade is going to be another guy that's going to get an opportunity to make some plays for this defense. So that's kind of what's happened in Ticat land the last little while.
Yeah, I think you got to give credit to the Canadian scout, like Sean Burke. Does he run the Canadian?
Burke, it's Drew Alamang is our Canadian
scout. Drew Alamang.
Burkey is the assistant general manager. I'm sure he has a role in this as well. But yeah, like their scouting department, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, you get an eighth-round pick, and Thomas Erlington, whenever he gets in the game, I mean, the kid just makes plays. He had a 10-yard average this game. Him and Timmons, I mean, we have really good Canadian running backs. And I noticed that I think they had both of them in at once, and then they had the five-receiver set of All-American receivers, which is, I mean, if you can run the ball with these kids and have that amount of talent, American talent on the field, like, bless Mike Jones. I think he's a good talent.
Who?
I think he needs to get exactly. I think he's a good talent. I think has some potential there, but he just needs to. He gets. He has the yips sometimes. He'll drop a pass and then it'll just ruin his day. But if you can get these two Canadian guys in the backfield at the same time, and you can plug in Williams and Tolliver and Tasker and Banks and Saunders, I mean, that is incredible. But what were we talking about?
We're talking about the signings, but it's okay, man. Nothing better than just chit-chatting about how deep this team is at Canadian talent, because the one thing we know, you got to get stellar quarterback play, and you got to have depth at your Canadian positions. Ticats have both of that, and those two things add up to Grey Cup. I don't want to get too ahead of myself. So I know the team's 3-4, but maybe we're just coming off the high of the butt kicking of the Alouettes.
I see the comment section now.
But hey, that's the truth of the matter, man. You play good defense, you have good quarterback play, and you have talented and a deep Canadian roster. You win a lot of football games that way, man, and that's what the Ticats have.
And we're set up for the future with with that trade, two first round draft picks the next 2 years, I believe. So I mean, we're gonna be stocked. We're gonna stockpile unless there's like they trade one for an asset or something. But the future looks good. In Tiger Town for the Canadian depth.
Well, and remember when everyone made fun of Hamilton for not signing Mark Chapman? And yeah, we can talk about that. And yeah, it's silly that they trade up for a guy to take him first overall and then lowball him on a contract off. We talked about that months ago. But they haven't really missed him. Like, if he's really that good, he'll just make this team that much better. But it's not like they have so much Canadian depth and so much Canadian talent that they can, as odd as this is to say, miss on a first overall pick, and it doesn't hurt them all that much.
No, and we've done well with the other picks, it seems, so far anyways, in 2018. So yeah, I don't think about him. I don't care if he comes to the team this year. I don't think we need him. Like, oh my god, we need Chapman so bad. I don't think that's the case at all. So let him, he's signed in the States. I wish him all the best. Hope he does well down there. Hope he gets signed and he has a good career. But yeah, we're not hurting to see him back, especially this season.
All right, let's talk some CFL news. And the first bit is less CFL news and more Canadian football news, because this past week on the PlayStation 4, the Xbox One, and I believe soon to be coming to the PC, Maximum Football 2018 was released. This is the sequel to last year's highly anticipated Canadian Football 2017 that unfortunately Mike and I could not play because we are hashtag Team PS4, and it was only available for the Xbox last year. But Maximum Football is on the PS4. I picked up a copy. You picked up a copy. I wrote a review for 3 Down Nation, so if you want to hear what I have to say about it or read what I have to say about it, you can go get it there. But, Mike, I'm curious. We were chatting over text last week when we both got the game, kind of going back and forth with it. You've had it now for about a week. What are your thoughts on this game?
All right, I'm going to be brutally honest. It's not that good. I didn't have high expectations. It's not going to be Madden, obviously. I know that. But I don't think I can play it. Like, it's just such a – I'm glad the CFL didn't put their license to it, because this is just – it's not a very good game. It's – the players don't react. You pass the ball down the field, and, like, the coverage is just – it's just a really wonky game. It's fun for what it is. I've been waiting my whole life for a three-down football game. And the thing is, I'm a Madden player. Like, every year I buy the new Madden. I'm a sucker that way. And it just doesn't compare. And I knew it wouldn't compare. I knew it wouldn't. It's like playing Madden from 1997, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, the good thing about it, the stadiums look like the stadium, which is really cool. You know, there's three downs, which is really cool. I like how you can send the players in motion. You have the waggle there. But, and I think, you know, I think the price point was a little high. I think this game is like a $15 game, maybe even lower than that. It's just there's only a season mode. You can't play online. I know there was limitations, and I hope maybe next, you know, as they go along, they'll get better. But for me, this game's a thumbs down.
Yeah, it's a thumbs in the middle, leaning towards down, because of all the things you said, I completely agree with. The thing about it, though, is if the CFL ever got together with this company and sunk the money into it, I think you wouldn't see – if this was a licensed CFL game, I don't think you see this version of it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't
no. –
like, the graphics are not good. When you made the comment to me, man, it's like playing Madden 98. It's like, yeah, that's exactly what it's like. Everything you liked about it, it's cool to play a game in Tim Hortons Field with Canadian rules and Canadian players. I like the customization aspect of it. And this is something I wrote in my piece on 3Down, where you can edit the rosters and make those players the players on the teams. And you can edit the colors and you can edit the names. And that's a cool feature that I think is important if you want to make it as authentic as you possibly can as a CFL game that isn't a CFL game. But yeah, some of the same complaints, it's like it's very rudimentary. It almost feels like when you pass the ball, it's just random if the guy catches it or not.
And it look the throwing motion out of the quarterback is like odd.
Yeah,
the
way he it's throws like, is like it looks like he's throwing one direction when you're throwing the other. I think the bones of what an actual licensed CFL game could be is here. The fact that they've been able to get the motion, the fact they've been able to get like one thing I thought was kind of cool is if you punt from your end zone, there's a button that lets you kneel so you can concede to safety. Like the little things like that. We always heard, oh, well, we can't do that in Madden because it's too difficult. Well, this little company in Peterborough found a way. And I think for that alone, it's worth it to be like, thank you for this. And it's fun to be able to play that. But at the same time, like I said, I think bones and the structure for a viable CFL game is here. We know what the – even if it was a CFL game with much better graphics, a little bit better gameplay – like you would pay $30, $35 for it, right? Like
no question.
And I think that it's here. So if the CFL and the CFLPA can come together with this group and maybe put, instead of coming out with a 2019, maybe save it for 2020, like put the time and effort into this, I think the structure for a very successful CFL video game is there. I think, but for right now, this is the best we got. It's fun. It's cool to play with it in this way. But yeah, it's tough, especially if you've like I haven't played a Madden game in a very long time. I think Madden 10 was the last one I bought, but this doesn't even come close to being as good as that. So, and it's what 8 years later since years since Madden 10 came out. So, like there's still a lot of work to be done here. But you know what? For what it is, I'm glad it exists. But I just wish that we would. Everyone, all these partners would come together so we could get something that is truly representative of the Canadian Football League in video game form.
Yeah, it's like, and I don't want to, you know, on it too hard. I mean, listen, if you just want to play a three-down football game, video game, you haven't played a video game, you haven't played a football video game in a long time, then I would recommend this because it's what we wanted for so long, you know, a three-down version video football game. But, you know, to someone who plays Madden every single year, it's tough to play it just because it's going back so far. So, yeah, I'd recommend it if you're just a casual video game player, like you are, Josh. You don't you're not a gamer, so
not anymore.
yeah, so I'm assuming you enjoyed it quite a bit. So, yeah, if you don't play video games, then I say go get it.
Okay, last bit of CFL news, and this we'll just touch on this quickly. But after Edmonton released Terrell Owens off the neg list, we kind of thought, well, maybe that was it for the Terrell Owens story. But lo and behold, this past weekend, who other than Chris Jones worked out Terrell Owens? This has caused kind of look, the writers did something. Chris Jones did something. So, of course, there's going to be people with opinions. I don't really see a problem with it. Look, it's not like he signed him to a multi-year, $250,000 contract. They worked him out. He's free to work out with any team. They went and worked him out. Who knows what will come with it. But, man, the vitriol aimed at Jones at this one, I don't know. It seems like if that guy, if he helped an old lady across the street, there'd be someone who'd be like, yeah, he only did that to steal her wallet. You know what I mean? Like, for right. Some people, he just can't do anything right. What did you think when you heard the news that Chris Jones had worked out Terrell Owens on the weekend?
It's surprising in a way. You just look at Terrell Owens. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in his life right now. He just got inducted to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he didn't show up for the friggin' ceremony. I mean, I think some of it's spite, to be honest. He's just like, I just want to play in any league. But, yeah, I don't think he'll play. I don't think there's anything wrong at looking at him. I mean, you do everything you can to make your team better, and if you feel that Terrell Owens at 44 can help out your team, then go for it. But I don't see him signing with the Riders. But you never know. Stranger things have happened.
You do know. I don't see it either. I just think this is, look, you kick every tire, you uncover every stone to try to make your football team better. And I think that's what they're doing, and I don't think anything will come of it. But if it does, then it does. And maybe we'll see Terrell Owens play some Canadian football, which would be kind of neat, as we talked about a few weeks ago. But there's no real reason to belabor this anymore. Let's move on to handout. We had a plethora of bozos, slapdicks, and Joe. We had so many people that we have like an honorable mention this week, because we had so many possible nominees this week. The honorable mention goes to Chris Jones of Saskatchewan Roughriders, because in what was sort of like, I don't know how this happens, Mike, but they screwed up their roster and accidentally submitted an older roster. And then Matt Elam, who was their starting Sam linebacker, wasn't listed on the roster. Instead, it was Derek Moncrief, who's on IR. He was listed in his place. So as when the game was about to start, the referees informed Jones that Elam's not on the roster. He can't play, so they had to play a man short. How does this happen?
You think they're trying to pull a fast one? Because Jones has tried to pull fast ones in the past with their roster, with the ratio and all that stuff. Or do you think it was just an idiotic move? They just messed up.
Well, it's got to be that, because if you go to the Saskatchewan Roughriders website or even to their Twitter, you look at their game day roster that they sent out to everyone, and Elam's on there. Like, it's right. Not like they had Moncrief on that. Like, I just don't know how this happens. This is like, it just gives more fuel to the Chris Jones haters out in Saskatchewan that, you know, look, he screwed this up, and oh, they lost the game, so maybe this be, I don't know. It's just what a it's insane that something like this would happen. Yeah.
I know. Moving on to...
Yeah, let's get to the awards proper, Mike, and start with your bozo.
All right, my bozo goes to Mr. Jason Muss.
Oh, God.
Throwing a temper tantrum on this, throwing the Gatorade. He looked like an idiot doing it, too. He didn't even get it off the table cleanly, you know. You know, who are we to talk about Jason Muss when we had Ken Austin for many years? They're very similar in their temper tantrums that they have on the sideline, but I feel like Moss, maybe not. I mean,
Moss takes it to a whole new level. In the last year, we've seen Jason Muss attempt to body slam a Gatorade jug and absolutely obliterate his headset. And yes, we've seen him rip on like remote coaches. I've never seen Ken Austin do any of those things.
Well, we've seen him bump into players.
We saw him hit a player, and we did see him smack a ref's hand. So, yes, those things are probably objectionably worse. But you know what we didn't see? We didn't see him do that and then do it again. Jason Muss is just like – this just seems like someone who's out of control. And the reason that I want to talk about this especially is, how do his players react to this? Like, how does – if they make a play on the field, if they lose control and do something, how does their head coach then sit them down and go, you know, we got to be more disciplined when this guy's out there trying to body slam a freaking Gatorade jug, failing to do so, by the way?
Yep. Looking like a bozo in the process. Yeah, it doesn't – it's not very good leadership skills now, is it? I mean, you have to be – you're supposed to be the one with the head on your shoulders. You know, you're supposed to be the one that control your temper. You know, on to the next play, blah, blah, blah. It's all right, we're going to, you know, whatever. And he's just not that guy. Now, maybe – you know, obviously the Eskimos have been a good team the last couple of years. It's been working for him. But at a certain point, you know – someone's going to look at him and go, maybe this guy isn't worth keeping around anymore. And I'm not saying that that's going to happen anytime soon. But if he keeps acting this way, then, you know, some questions, some eyebrows are going
to
be raised.
You brought up Ken Austin. You know what worked? Ken Austin worked. He went to 2 straight Grey Cups and 3 straight East Finals when he first got here. And then his act wore thin and players started tuning him out and they started losing football games. And now he is no longer the head coach of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. This has a shelf life. These types of outbursts only work for so long, and at some point, Moss is going to run out of rope, and players are going to start tuning him out because it's like when you're a kid and you have one parent. There's always, I know, I'm sure growing up you had the one parent who's kind of the disciplinarian and the one who was kind of the nice guy, and maybe they alternated roles. But if they didn't alternate roles and it was the same person every single time yelling at you, at some point you just tune them out and go, well, you know what? You're just going to yell at me no matter what I do, so it doesn't really matter what I do. So just have at it, and you kind of just – you don't care anymore. That's going to happen with these guys, man. That's what's going
to
happen.
To be fair, I've never seen them rip into a player. Like, I've never physically seen that. Have you?
Publicly, no. But you got to imagine that he's – like. If he's this fiery and temperamental when he's winning the game and things don't go his way, what's he like at a practice when maybe the guys are a little sloppy in their execution? Like, this is all conjecture. I don't know. I don't go to Edmonton practices, and I'm sure everyone there would say, oh, no, that's not what he's like. But maybe in private, this is a lot different. But even so, it's like – how do you go into a coach's meeting and say, okay, we got to fix this, 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 and this. These are discipline issues. And then the players in the back of their minds are going, well, we see you lose your temper and like, you know what I mean? Like, it's at some point the message is just going to get clouded. It's going to get lost and guys are going to tune them out.
Yep. Absolutely. Now moving on to a chode.
Oh yeah.
Shall we? You got a slap dick. So
I got a slap dick. I got maybe the biggest slap dick in the history of the show.
All right. So my chode this week is Furon Lalji for saying that the U of Montreal is a better team than the Montreal Alouettes. Now, that's just ridiculous. I mean, they don't even come close. In no world is the University of Montreal a better team than the Alouettes. You know, a lot of people think that NCAA teams could beat CFL teams. That's just not true, okay? So to say that the U of Montreal is a better team than the professional Montreal Alouettes is chode behavior, and it's just false in so many ways.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. The reason that I think this is a good thing to bring up is how many CFL fans lose their freaking minds when someone says, well, Alabama would beat the Alouettes. And it's like, no, they wouldn't. Alabama is a really good college football team, but they are a college football team. 40%, like, and this is Alabama, and they're a football factor, and they produce a lot of NFL players. So let's work on the assumption, and we will drastically overestimate, and say that the Alabama Crimson Tide produce 50% of their team ends up in the NFL. That means 50% of their team doesn't play professional football. 100% of the players that play for any CFL team are professionals. Now you look to me, it's not even that he said that the U of Montreal, it's not that he said a U sports team or something like that. To me, it's just idiotic and chody to say something like a college team would beat a pro team. No college team would beat any pro team at anything ever. Nope. Let's stop making this comparison. It's lazy. It's lame. We've all done it. We've all done it to death. Let's move on. Let's find another way in which to say how bad a professional team is instead of saying they would lose to their local or to the best or whatever college team. It's just, it would never happen. It's chody. Yeah. Very chilly.
It's grown-ass men playing, you know, not children, but people that are not fully developed yet. I mean, that's a huge part of it, right? It's just, yeah, big-time show. It goes to Furon Lalji. Now let's get to your slapdickery.
Okay. This almost pains me as much as saying Luke Tasker was one of my things I didn't like about this game. But Mike, I got to give you my slapdick, buddy. There was a picture that surfaced online this week of you wearing Saskatchewan Roughriders gear. What gives?
I lost a bet, Josh. I lost two bets, actually, when the Tiger Cats should have won at least one of those games. I would have not been wearing Saskatchewan Roughrider gear to the Edmonton game this week. But, you know, I followed through with my bet, kind of. I ditched the hat that I was supposed to wear, which was quite clever and smart of me. You know, I'm a smart guy. Well, not really.
But hold on. I'm totally cool with ditching of the hat. Flat-brimmed caps? No, that's what six-year-olds wear. Six-year-olds wear flat brims. No one else. No, the flat brim cap is for D-bags. Mike, you may be a slapdick, but you're no D-bag, my friend.
No. And also, I have to mention the sticker. Like, take your sticker off your damn hat.
Yeah, that's
right?
Ridiculous.
These kids with their stickers. But yeah, I lost a bet, and I had to wear the rider gear. I didn't enjoy it. I covered it up as much as I could with my nice 1996 Grey Cup Hamilton jacket. So it was an unfortunate thing that I had to do, but, you know, a bet's a bet. So sorry, Ticat fans out there. I'm not a Rider fan, okay? I'm fully 100% Ticat fanatic.
We would have a new co-host out there, Ticat exactly. fans, if Mike was a Rider fan. I would not allow him to ever speak on this podcast again. I might do the show solo. But whose jersey were you wearing?
Oh, Nelson Green, of course.
Tell everyone the story of Nelson Green, because that's just too funny.
I tweeted out something about, you know, at least I'll be wearing Nelson Green, you know, the greatest quarterback in Rough Rider history. Obviously, I meant Nealon Green. It was a typo. But, you know, I think that if you asked Nealon, he would prefer the name Nelson.
Yeah,
you know,
so from now on, Nealon Green, whenever we talk about him on the show, which, to be honest, I can't think he's going to come up very often.
No,
I mean, unless you lose
so,
another
Josh.
Stupid bet and have to wear his jersey again. But from here on out, Nealon Green, the greatest Rider quarterback of all time, will henceforth be known as Nelson Green.
I got a little slack because I was talking to a super fan, Mike, from the Eskimos podcast before the game, and I accidentally thought that Nealon Green took the Riders to the Grey Cup, but I was thinking of Reggie Slack, another all-time great quarterback. So
the second greatest in the history of the Saskatchewan Roughriders.
Yeah, indeed.
Oh, man, we're going back in the time machine. Instead of going backwards, let's go forwards into the future, and let's talk about this week's upcoming game, Mike, shall we? This is going to be – I think it's going to be a really good football game, and it's going to be an awful lot tougher for our Hamilton Tiger Cats as they head to Investors Group Field to take on the 4-3 Winnipeg Blue Bombers on Friday night. The Tiger Cats have won their last two over the Bombers, winning in week three of this year, 31-17, and smashing the blue and gold 30-13 in Winnipeg last October. So we're going to do what we do every week. Why we'll win, why we'll lose. Mike, why don't you do the honors and tell us why the Tiger Cats will lose this game to Winnipeg on Friday night.
It's unfortunate news that I have to break to the Ticat fans that listen, but this is why they will lose. Winnipeg's defense is a lot better than Montreal's, obviously.
Oh, I call BS. Really? Someone's better than Montreal at something?
Oh, right. Yes. I think you're serious there for a second. But yeah, I mean, Winnipeg's defense is top-notch. They're very good defense. You know, the offense has been really impressive to me this year. They throw in a lot of gadget plays. I call Mike O'Shea Inspector Gadget, but the offense will confuse the Ticats with all these trick plays. So that's another reason why they'll lose. And I think that Andrew Harris will have a big game. He's a stud at running back. He just is. I was wrong. I admit that. He's really come into his own in the last couple of years, and he's going to have a big game this week. So why are they gonna win, Josh? Tell me some good news here.
Let's talk about Andrew Harris. Now, I think we all know the Ticats against the run are not very good so far this year. They're the worst team against the run. They've allowed the most rush yards. They've allowed the most yards per rush. They've allowed over 100 yards rushing in, I think, all but two games this year. So, man, that you look at that and go, man, Andrew Harris is going to have a field day. But one of those games where the Ticats were able to hold at least Harris in check was this year, and Harris against the Ticats with the Bombers historically hasn't played that great. He has just 100-yard rushing game against Hamilton and just two games where he combined for over 100 yards from scrimmage. His average against the Ticats since he signed with the Bombers is 15 carries for 62 yards and about 3.5 catches for about 29 yards. So Harris's numbers aren't great against Hamilton. He's only scored, I believe, 2 touchdowns against the Ticats in 5 games against them with the Bombers. So they seem to have some success against Andrew Harris. And I think if they can have that success against Andrew Harris, they can win this football game. Next reason is Matt Nichols. We know the Ticats, we talked about a little bit earlier. They are one of the best teams against the pass in the CFL. Second fewest pass yards, fewest completions, lowest completion percentage, and they have the third best quarterback rating and the third best pass efficiency rating. So they hem in quarterbacks like no one else. And Matt Nichols against the Ticats hasn't played particularly well. He's had 4 starts against them, 3 with the Bombers, 1 with the Eskimos way back when. Hasn't thrown for 300 yards against the Ticats and only averages just a little over 200 yards passing. The one area he has been good in, 5 touchdowns to 1 interception. But, you know, Nichols, he's one of those guys that over the last year and a bit, I've started to come around on. But against the Ticats, they do a pretty, pretty good job of keeping him from beating them. So if they can keep Nichols from beating them and they keep Harris from beating them, they can keep that offense in check. And then the last reason, this is kind of more fun than anything else, Investors Group Field has been better to the Ticats than it really has to the Bombers. Hamilton is 5-1 all time at IGF. And that one loss that they suffered came back a few years ago. Do you remember that game that was on a Wednesday and there was a weather delay of like 2 hours? That was the only time the Ticats have lost in Winnipeg since they opened their new barn in 2013. So they tend to keep Harris in check. They tend to keep Nichols in check. And they tend to play really well in Winnipeg. That all adds up to a win, my friend.
Hey, I hope you're right, because that would be a huge win for this team. I mean, go on the road into Winnipeg into a tough environment, to steal a win, come back, we're 4-4, back to 500, baby. That's what we need.
Back to 500, going into the bye on a win, coming out, and they get Edmonton at home, Toronto at home, Toronto on the road. 3 very winnable games. They can win this one. I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but we could be going right after Labor Day with a team with 7 wins. And that's, as crazy as it sounds, that's probably good enough to get them into the playoffs right there.
Yep. Yeah, especially, you know, in the East, you just never know. Toronto might be turning the corner, maybe. I don't know. Ottawa is okay. But yeah, I mean, you don't, like in the couple, in the past, you don't need a ton of wins to get into the playoffs. And the Ticats don't usually get a ton of wins. So if they can pull off and they'll be 7-4 after Labor Day and after that Labor Day rematch, I will be ecstatic.
Yeah, what do you think? Do you think it's going to be a pretty tight game now? Or do you think, like legitimately, like we talk about losses and wins and all that stuff. But I think this is going to be a pretty tight football game. I think these two teams match up really well against one another.
Yeah, they both have really good coaching staffs. They both have really good talent on the field. I think we could be in for a really exciting game with maybe a bunch of points on the board. But I do see it coming down. You know, I see it being like a 7-point differential or maybe less. So I think we're going to see a doozy this on Friday night.
Well, let's hope so. I either hope it's a really close game, an exciting game, or the Ticats beat the brakes off them like they did the Alouettes last week. So one of those two is fine by me. The third one where Winnipeg blows them out, I don't want to see that. That's not fun.
No, that would not be good. That would not be good, Josh.
All right, so that was Podski Weaver for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.